From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. There is a tremendous irony in President Donald Trump's use of his Twitter account to deny the science of global warming. The very means that he uses to communicate with millions of Americans is possible because of the same sort of reasoning through which climate scientists have declared a global emergency. We are deeply dependent on the technologies ushered in by great scientific advances, and yet our societies seem to be succumbing to inherently irrational and anti-science positions, from climate denialism and a skepticism of vaccines to a dismissive attitude towards scientists and science-based decisions in general. My guest is Michael J. Thompson. He's a professor of political theory in the Department of Political Science at William Patterson University. He's the founding editor of Logos, A Journey of Modern Society and Culture, the author of 8 books, the editor of 8 more books, and he has co-edited a new book that he joins me to discuss now. It's called Anti-Science and the Assault on Democracy, Defending Reason in a Free Society. Welcome to the program, Professor Thompson.
Thank you for having me.
So this book is a collection of essays, not just by scientists, but also historians and philosophers. What went into gathering these writers together in your attempt to emphasize the importance of centering science as we think about democracy? Why are historians and philosophers grouped in?
You know, I think the most important reason is that the crisis that's been happening, not only in the United States, but throughout much of the world, has been a crisis both of reason and a crisis of democracy. And historically, the relationship between the rise of science and the rise of democracy and the idea of free society were linked. And what we wanted to do was collect a group of essays that tried to relink this connection, to show people that what we commonly associate with science, i.e. technology, really should not be seen as really science itself, that science has a kind of attitude attached to it that can be helpful in reconstructing democratic attitudes and a democratic culture.
So when we look historically through various societies, do we see a strong correlation between trust in the scientific method and a proliferation of democratic ideals?
I think that what you see is a link between not so much the scientific method and democratic ideals. What you see is something that comes before that. And that is the idea of an attempt to be skeptical of and critical of authority. And that's an important component to democracy. And the reason is science, true science, not science that's dependent on technology or capital or, you know, economic power, but science as an open inquiry into truth can only occur when you have thrown off the kind of yoke of tradition and authority in general. And I think one of the ways that you see this historically is in the, when you see the scientific method emerging, but not only the scientific method, the modern scientific method, say in the Renaissance in Italy, but much earlier in the Islamic world, where you actually had a proliferation of philosophical attitudes about nature, and a skepticism about religious authority or kingly authority. And this always appears wherever reason is able to kind of inquire into the truth freely. The first thing it has to do is throw off authority, because authority is that which tells you what the truth is, which in many ways kind of confines your ideas about the world. So in order for science to even exist, there has to be a kind of skepticism to or critical attitude about authority in general. It could be religious, it could be political, it could be cultural, but that is probably the most important component. And the more that people succumb to authority of the mind, of law, of the masses, whatever, the less free inquiry there will be. And that's, I think, the crucial link between democracy and science.
Is there a difference today in how skepticism of science occurs on the right versus the left end of the political spectrum?
I think at the extremes they touch. I think that one of the excesses of the left's critique of reason, particularly that emerged in the 1980s and 1990s, called postmodernism, was really a criticism of rationality, scientific reason. And the idea was, if you think about it in ways, the idea that they were kind of working with was not totally wrong. In other words, you would say, look at the way science is taken up by industrialism, by the military, by power, systems of power. And that's true, but that's not the same thing as science. And so what they did was move from a critique of, say, the technological application to power to a critique of science in general. And I think there's a similar tradition on the right, which goes back further, which wants to protect authority, which wants to protect hierarchy, which wants to protect tradition. And the right's interest has always been the protection of throne and altar. I mean, going back to the French Revolution and before. And in many ways, science was on the other side of this. I mean, if you really look at the history, the politics throughout history, the French Revolution, the American Revolution, anywhere you had this, the advocates for revolt, for progressive change, were also advocates of science. Whether it's Jefferson or Thomas Paine, any of them, they saw that reason was essential for creating a democratic community that would be able to rule itself and not kind of, allow external authorities to rule for them. So I think there is a difference. On the left, the idea was that, we shouldn't have any kind of alternative form of power. That led to a skepticism of everything in postmodernism. That's the far, far left. But on the right, there's a deeper tradition, I think, which seeks to hold science back because it doesn't want critique. It doesn't want to question the status quo.
I want to explore a little bit of the sort of left approach because it sounds as though the very scientific skepticism of authority is then applied to the authority of science.
It is
For example, an anti-vaxxer, somebody who's skeptical of the benefits of vaccines, might say that they're being skeptical of scientific authority that says vaccines are important.
That's true, and they should be. Being skeptical is one thing, but ignoring evidence that refutes that weakens your skepticism is another. And I think with vaccinations, for example, of course it is. I think one of the most important things that anyone who has a truly scientific attitude would tell you, and this is one of the reasons why we really wanted to get people who did the natural sciences involved with the book, was to show this as well, is that a truly scientific attitude is, no true scientist will tell you, I'm an authority in X, I'm an authority in Y. Because science is an inherently self-correcting system. So I think anyone with a true scientific attitude, whether they're in medicine or in physics or in anything, would say to you, this is the position we have to accept given the evidence. And I think with vaccinations, one of the examples is, I think it's right to say, I'm not going to accept what the medical community just tells me is good for me or my family. That would be just as anti-democratic as rejecting the scientific evidence. I think that what's really important is an attitude that says, am I able to change my values or my attitudes about the world based on rational persuasion? And if I can't do that, then democracy will break down. We'll break down into our interest groups or identity groups. And then there's really no way out.
And of course, unfortunately, a lot of members of the scientific community over history who have claimed a false authority have ended up giving science a bad name, if you will, and have ended up leading to people being then skeptical of all, say, you know, medicine or medical claims. But if each of us does understand what science is and applies it to our daily lives, and our decision making, then we are in effect all being scientists, aren't we?
In a way, yes. In a way, you the idea of a creative democracy is something that John Dewey talked about, for example. The idea of a creative democracy isn't the idea that each one of us has the same expertise as someone in chemistry or nuclear physics. The idea is that each one of us should be competent enough and confident enough in ourselves to be able to, as a society, assess ideas or data or propositions about truth or what is right or good as a process. And I think the problem really is, and here's where the postmodernists, like I said before, were right. When science gets wedded to power, it loses its scientific character. Hmm. I mean, and you almost see this all the time, and it becomes a tool for dominance. And that's not science anymore. I mean, it's the application of science, but it's not science as an attitude or as a worldview. So the idea of science and democracy going together is something unique. It's not that science enables democracy or democracy enables science. It's that they're both mutually supporting dimensions of a kind of more, a freer a way of life. And it's freer in the sense that we can hold authorities accountable. We don't have to accept what anyone says, even if I am not an expert in a particular field.
So today, the problem is that we are flooded with information, and the ability to tell scientific fact from fiction may be hampering our ability to, you know, be rational, right? I mean, this whole notion that there's fake news everywhere, the internet helping to proliferate information in ways that really confuses our brains that might not even be able to handle this enormous amount of information available at our fingertips. Do you worry that there's just a difficulty in being able to tell fact from fiction?
Yes, and I think that the more that society becomes technologically and socially complex, the more that this becomes a danger in society, and not just for people who are involved with technology and science, but the idea that we have created, I think, a kind of what seems like an anarchy of information, but in many ways, you know, if you look at the internet or if you look at the way news and things have been deployed, power still shines through the chaos. And I think, you know, one of the things that's happened is, you know, even if you've noticed how attitudes about climate change among the public have shifted over time, I think because, you know, you have had much more of a proliferation of scientific data, and people are becoming more and more persuaded that we're in a crisis situation. But nevertheless, politically, the same powers have the capacity to consolidate their position, to basically completely. Well, if you think about the kind of split between the populism and a kind of mainstream community, the problem really can be traced back, I think, to the fact that I'm not sure people are being skeptical about science itself as much as skeptical about expertise, people who claim to be experts. And you're talking about people who are alienated from any form of control over their lives. And so in many ways, I think even though there is a flood of information, it can be easily manipulated. The only way to combat this is in many ways to reanimate a kind of democratic culture about science, and to kind of, newspapers and journalists to be able to, for them to have a bigger platform in terms of explaining what's happening. And, if we don't do this, then I think the possibility for manipulation becomes greater. And that's a problem.
In the book that you've written in and edited, Anti-Science and the Assault on Democracy, that we're discussing, you have a chapter by Barbara Forrest entitled Betraying the Founder's Legacy, Democracy is a Weapon Against Science. Now, this is something so relevant, not just in the United States, right? We're sort of seeing this in many different parts of the world where you're having authoritarian regimes come into power through democratic means. Part of those democratic means are to tamp down on scientific reason, which is just such a bizarre state of affairs we find ourselves in.
It seems bizarre, but once you realize that democracy itself really is, a concept that requires an adjective before it, right? So, for example, in Hungary, Viktor Orban says, that his right-wing government is a democracy. It's just illiberal democracy. So the word of the concept of democracy can be taken to be moved toward a populist right-wing type of political regime. Or if it's a democracy that's united to kind of republicanism, to a kind of dedication to codified principles of equality and justice, then you have a very different kind of democracy. So I think what Barbara Forrest is talking about is how can elites, particularly when she's talking about in Louisiana and the climate change debate, how can elites manipulate public sentiment in order to, in terms of anti-rational arguments, to actually usher in ultimately anti-democratic, in other words, against the common good, policies. This is happening everywhere. I mean, this is happening at the level of economic policy, environmental policy, almost on every level. You can see this happening within the past several years for sure. I mean, with Trump, there's no question about this, but also within Europe. You see this is part of the platform, plank of the platform of every far right government, is to basically overturn almost all the basic scientific policies that have been established by liberal and social democratic governments. Mm-hmm. So democracy is not a word that we can use on its own. We have to say that democracy is something that, when you talk about the power of the people, the demos, that's part of what the word democracy means. But democracy also means, is also attached to the concept of a republic, of a res publica, of a common good. And the masses can never, in a true democracy, the masses can never suppress or eliminate the minority and yet maintain its banner as kind of upholding a common good. I mean, and I think that that's another reason why the scientific method, well, not scientific method itself, but the scientific attitude is important. Skepticism of authority and a kind of investment in the idea of equality and universalism, that principles apply to all, not just to a particular group. So when you drill down, a lot of ideas about identity or ethnicity, that can be turned into something democratic populist, should actually be combated in terms of ethnic particularism and so on. So I think science, these attitudes about science and power and equality and universality and universalism, are very essential to any kind of rational republic, kind of democracy, and the institutions of democratic life.
I want to pick up finally on what you were saying earlier about journalists and journalism. Would you say that in order to have the healthiest kind of democracy, where information and decision-making based on information is key, that journalists need to think like scientists? Because after all, we are pursuing inquiry in a rational manner.
Absolutely. And I don't think that they are different in terms of their activities. In many ways, the rise of modern journalism takes off from the rise of the modern scientific method, the idea of objectivity, the idea of let's get at a kind of as much of a truth as is possible, assessment of evidence, persuasion through fact. These are all things that are shared not only by the technical scientific community, but also journalists And I think that, you know, the decay of journalistic standards on the one hand, but also the assault on good journalistic standards that's been happening is part and parcel of the anti-scientific attitude. It's a revolt against elites, or what they perceive to be elites, and it's a revolt against objective reason. People want their truth. Their truth gives them existential groundedness in a world that is inherently chaotic, changing seemingly by the minute. And it's a world that has changed so rapidly, I think, that people, that many people are kind of going inward. And that means I don't want my ideas challenged. I don't want my perceptions about the world to be corrected. I find solace in them. And that's a problem.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. Much more to discuss, so folks can certainly pick up a copy of the book that we're talking about at bookstores, Anti-Science and the Assault on Democracy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Michael J. Thompson is a professor of political theory in the Department of Political Science at William Patterson University. And we've been discussing the new book that he has just co-edited, Anti-Science and the Assault on Democracy, Defending Reason in a Free Society. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo. Thank you so much. That was really